Welcome to the Defense and Aerospace Report podcast. I'm your host, Vago Maradian. Our podcast is brought to you by Bell. Since 1935, Bell has been redefining flight. Learn more about its pioneering spirit at bellflight.com. Later in the program, a look ahead at the inaugural Leading Ladies in Defense Summit on Thursday. But first, joining us as he does most Mondays is Byron Callen of the independent Washington research firm Capital Alpha Partners to help us with the look ahead at the week. Byron, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, glad to be here, Vago.
And before we get started, our global coverage is sponsored by Leonardo DRS. Northrop Grumman sponsors our weekly cyber report and our cyber coverage overall. Fincantieri Marinette Marine sponsors our naval coverage. General Atomics Aeronautical Systems sponsors our coverage of strategy. And Beretta USA sponsors our land warfare coverage. Byron, it's going to be a busy week. Obviously, a lot of conferences. I should say the Association of the United States Army's annual Global Force Symposium is happening virtually this year. But Congress also has got a busy week. Let's start up on the Hill. What are some of the hearings you're going to be paying closest attention to?
Well, House Armed Services Committee is going to hold three hearings at the end of the week. I think on March 18th, there is an unmanned systems of the Department of Navy hearing. And then on the 19th, there's going to be a hearing on the DOD's organic industrial base and another on DOD electromagnetic spectrum operations. So I'll be listening or reading transcripts for those hearings. And then on March 17th, Senate Foreign Relations is going to hold a hearing on the U.S. strategic competition with China.
You know, obviously, China is looming large on everybody's radar screens. You know, the Secretaries Blinken and Austin are in Asia this week. Obviously, a big meeting on Friday, as we discussed on the roundtable. There's going to be a meeting between Jake Sullivan, Blinken, as well as their Chinese counterparts in Alaska on Friday. What are some of the think tank events that you're tracking?
I think in Alaska, they're going to be celebrating Festivus early this year, because I think this meeting is going to be more about the airing of grievances. I look for the tone, kind of what's the readout, and particularly what does China say about this after Secretary Blinken and National Security Advisor Sullivan air their grievances about China. I don't mean to be flip about it. I mean, it is obviously very serious, but look, they're not going to be starting around a negotiation on trade, for example. And clearly, you know, I think it's going to be some of the human rights issues that are going to be at the forefront of this discussion, and it's going to be contentious. On some of the think tank events, the Center for New American Security is holding an event on a U.S. technology strategy that really does kind of play to the broader competition, the strategic competition with China. CSIS having an event on the future of the U.S. Navy with Representatives Luria and Gallagher, both are on the House Armed Services Committee. And then the Royal United Services Institute in London on March 17th is holding an event on Europe confronting a darkening geopolitical landscape. So those are some of the think tank events that are going on that are defense related.
And I should point out to the audience that our good friend Brian Clark of the Hudson Institute think tank had a conversation with Representative Luria as well. Today on Monday. So I commend everybody to check it out. It was two nuclear qualified sailors talking about the future of the United States Navy and discussing infrastructure that the Biden administration's infrastructure request should have money in it for shipyards infrastructure investment that we need as a nation on the military side of the equation, right? I mean, we know we have civilian problems, but we also have military challenges as well. Global Force Symposium is also happening. That starts tomorrow and runs through the end of the week. What are some of the messages, Byron, you expect to hear from senior Army leaders? You know, we've heard Major General Kaufman on combat vehicles talking. He has another event this week he's doing in town. What are some of the messages you expect to hear from Army leaders? Because General McConville at this point is making it clear that he's actually not cutting troops, right? And the expectation is that the Army would be the bill payer for the Air Force and the Navy, but that might not be the case actually in 2022.
Yeah, and I think he's made that for FY22. Now, what happens beyond that is still obviously very debatable. Look, you know, there are a series of panel discussions. This event is virtual, like most things these days. But the panel discussions are all going to be on these major Army modernization priorities. So there's one on next generation combat vehicles, another on networks, another on artillery and fires. Another on vertical lift. There are a couple others, I think, one on innovation. They'll all be good deep dives and updates. I don't think there's going to be anything that will be earth-shatteringly different. I think, you know, an important message is going to be the Army is staying the course on these priorities. They've been very good at staying center line on that. They haven't strayed from it. And I think it's just too soon to say, you know, what will happen to the budgets for some of these programs. I think, you know, making the case in these kind of fora that things are moving ahead, you know, they're still an urgent need for, I shouldn't say an urgent, there's still a need for them. I think it will be good, but at the end of the day, you know, we have to see the FY22 budget, the reviews, and then obviously what happens as the administration builds out its FY23 budget, because I think that's where the real muscle movements will come out.
One of the things you like to do in your morning, in your Monday notes, is sort of things to think about. And one of the things that you raise is the declining debt loading of the major defense contractors. Talk to us a little bit about the trend you're seeing and why you think it matters and why it's important.
Well, I just looked at the prime contractors in the United States. I didn't include Boeing and Raytheon Technologies. They're obviously prime defense contractors, but a lot of what's been going on in their balance sheets over the last year or so has been due to the pandemic. It's not to say there weren't also impacts on the financial positions for the major pure defense contractors. And you know, for a company like General Dynamics or L3Harris, there's also an aerospace, a commercial aerospace component to it. But the central message, I think it's just kind of an interesting point, a couple of points, really. Their net debt position, and all I'm really doing is taking their cash on their balance sheet at the end of each quarter and subtracting that from total debt. That has declined, which in most cases shows they've been increasing the cash balances on their balance sheet. Now, one of the things that's happened, however, and this is really, I think, part of the positioning during the pandemic, is a lot of these companies just haven't been buying their stock back. whereas, you know, pre-pandemic, they were pretty healthy purchasers of their own shares outstanding. Kind of what triggered the thinking on this was CACI, C-A-C-I, announced a $500 million accelerated share repurchase program, and the stock reacted very positively to that. And, you know, the other companies, L3Harris and Northrop Grumman, when they announced these divestitures, both managements committed to using the proceeds from those divestitures to buy back stock. I am not sure if that's the optimal strategy for cash in an environment that I think is going to be changing for these contractors. It might be a little bit more balanced with taking some risk, more venture investing, things like that, that are going to help them position. So I just think it's interesting, you know, that there has been such a fall off in share buybacks. At the same time, an increase in cash balances or reduction of these net debt balances. And that means, you know, I think as we start looking at a more normal era, you know, I would expect DOD is going to look again at its progress payment policies and probably reset those back to pre-COVID levels. And at the same time, you know, maybe these companies, because they don't have a whole lot else that they seem to be willing to do, will be buying their stock back again.
Byron, thanks very much for joining us. As always, it's always a pleasure. I should also point out that on Thursday at 6:30 p.m. D.C. time, the Atlantic Council will be hosting Admiral James Stavridis, as well as Elliot Ackerman, to discuss their book, 2034, A Novel of the Next World War. Admiral Stavridis will be our guest tomorrow to discuss what is an absolutely fascinating work that raises a whole series of strategic questions that the United States should be thinking about sooner rather than later. Byron, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
And joining us now to discuss the first annual Leading Ladies in Defense Summit, Expand and Excel Women Shaping the Industry, to be conducted virtually this year on March 18, are the organization's founder, Fiona Mackay, a courageous leadership expert with Makai Unlimited, a company that she founded. Fiona, thanks very, very much for joining us. And Angela Ambrose, the Vice President for Government Relations and Communications at General Motors Defense, who will be this year's keynote speaker at the event. I should also point out that GM Defense is one of the sponsors of the Leading Ladies series and the organization, and is also going to be joining us to sponsor our technology coverage. Fiona and Angela, thanks so very much for joining us.
Delighted to be here.
Thanks very much, Vago. Happy to be here.
An absolute pleasure having both of you on. Fiona, congratulations on the organization as well as the upcoming conference. There's a whole series of them. This one is the inaugural defense event. You've had an aerospace event. And you're in a pretty interdisciplinary field overall. And there's been enormous progress in women leading major companies, right? I mean, Lockheed Martin has had a female CEO in Marilyn Hewson. Phoebe Novakovic continues to lead General Dynamics Defense. Boeing Defense, Space and Security is led by Leanne Caret. And of course, I should point out, Angela, right? Mary Barra is the CEO of one of the big three automakers. But everybody acknowledges that there's room for improvement. Why did you launch the organization? And what do you hope that it and especially this conference are going to achieve?
So the Leading Ladies Of movement is a movement to accelerate the journey towards gender parity for women in industries where they are underrepresented. And so I decided to launch this because I have been very, very fortunate throughout my career in that I've had access to a lot of amazing women that have really inspired me to break through the glass ceiling. And I really want to make that possible for more women. I think that if we have access to communities in which we can inspire one another and help each other to see our full potential, I think that enables us to break through the glass ceiling at a faster rate.
I should also point out, right, that you're welcoming men to be part of this as well, right? I mean, to play a role in expanding opportunities.
It is absolutely open to men as well. And we actually have a lot of men registered for the upcoming event. To me, men are essential to helping women advance in the workplace. And that's why at Leading Ladies of Defense, we actually have a panel which is all about male allyship and how men can actually support women to create the change that's needed.
How does defense how do defense and aerospace rate compared to some of the other industrial sectors that you work in?
Well, if we look globally, women make up about 52% of the workforce. And then that drops to around 14% in management positions and 4% of the C-suite. So globally, all industries, we can see that there is definitely a challenge as people go up the ladder. I don't know the specific numbers for defense, but just by looking at, you know, who speaks on stages at conferences, looking at who is on the website and leadership for companies, we can see that there's still a huge gap there in terms of the number of women. And so I think compared to some industries such as, you know, automotive and finance and tech, we're still quite a way behind. And my concern is that if we don't start addressing this, I think the problem could worsen because I see a lot of women leave in their 30s and 40s to go to other industries and then we lose that talent. And so it's really important that people want to be part of the defense and aerospace community so that we are able to fill those C-suite positions.
And I should point out to the audience, you have experience at Boeing and at Rolls-Royce as well in your background. Angela, you began your career as a staffer for the now retired Congressman John Peterson, the Pennsylvania Republican. You then went on to CACI, Northrop Grumman, Accenture, and last year joined the GM defense team where Mary Barra is the chief executive. How's the industry changed in the last 20 years? And is there meaningful, right? I mean, are the changes meaningful? Because these things tend to be episodic. Folks, you know, women will get certain jobs, but it's a question of whether or not, as Fiona said, there are people in the pipeline to keep replenishing those C-suites so that the talent is there, right? I mean, ultimately, we want to benefit from this diversity at the end of the day. How has the industry changed in the last 20 years and how more do you think it has to change, given that it's still overwhelmingly male and overwhelmingly white?
Yeah, I would definitely say, at least in my tenure, kind of looking forward as a young staffer on the Hill, as you mentioned, and going to the Defense Department, inside the Intel community, and coming out into the private sector, I've seen a little bit of everything inside the Beltway in the defense space. And, you know, there were a lot of times when I was, you know, the sole backbencher in a room looking at a table full of men. And, you know, slowly I got my seat at that table. And what I wanted to do was ensure that there were women in the pipeline behind me that I could help bring up, and that I could look to women that were in the pipeline ahead of me so that I had a goal to achieve. And so, you know, starting on the Hill, even back in the early 2000s, look at the number of women representatives and women in the Senate in comparison to how the numbers have shifted. Obviously, looking at my DOD time, I see women in uniform and certainly in senior commanding officer positions and roles. So that's something that's very welcome to for other junior officers to look up to. And, you know, coming out into the private sector, you know, I traditionally have worked for a male CEO, and coming to GM to see a woman take the helm and be so strong and confident in that role. But more than that, being a visionary and taking the industry and pulling technology and tech along with the auto industry is something that I greatly value for my, you know, my personal benefit, but also for the rest of our industries that we work in, and certainly the other women that can look to leaders like Mary Barra, as you mentioned, and others that are now stepping into these senior level roles to say, you know, early 2000s, I never thought that that would be achievable for me. And fast forward about 20 years, and I think, gosh, that could be me, and I'm on the path to get there.
You know, before we started taping, I mean, one of the points we were talking about, right, is there was, you know, people discuss service secretaries, and, you know, for Air Force secretary, folks are like, oh, wow, you know, I guess that's the set aside woman, you know, job for women, as there are some very qualified women that are being considered for Air Force secretary, and the last three Air Force secretaries or four in a row could be women. But it's very interesting that if you pay attention to it and you look at the paintings on the wall, sort of the preceding 24 were all men, right? And nobody seemed to be making a big issue of that. Angela, you know, Fiona discussed the glass ceiling issue, and one of the things that propelled her. At the end of the day, is the needle moving fast enough, right? I mean, because at this day and age, it's still baffling that women still aren't making the same amount of money for the same job they're performing, and often with better qualifications than men, and are paid less. What are the things that have to change for that to change?
Yeah, and Fiona knows this very well about me, but negotiating is probably more near and dear to my heart than many things, because, you know, seeing that disparity among all of these industries, but specific to defense, which is the one I feel the most passionate about, it is something I fight for and help support those that are fighting to get their due. I definitely think there's still a glass ceiling, unfortunately, that is pretty heavy and thick above our heads, but there are cracks in that system now, and we're seeing them get wider. I think what's very important is that, you know, women know their worth. That's actually what we'll be talking about on Thursday at the Leading Ladies of a conference. Part of my keynote is truly understanding your value proposition and how you are an authentic leader, and how you bring those forward with you. Because obviously, if you're, you know, bringing something forward that is unique and wholly different, and you are the only person that can kind of fill that void, then you should be compensating accordingly for that. And, you know, it's something that, as you said, you know, we're certainly all looking at and watching. It's just not something that's talked about that often. There aren't a ton of studies saying this is how much you make at this level, and so you should be making this much at this level. Oftentimes you get into a role and you realize, wow, my male counterpart is making this many more dollars than me, or is a step higher than me, or gets promoted faster than me. And you start to ask the question of why. And I think what we all need to be doing to fix that, men and women alike, certainly together, is saying it is truly based on the person, their capabilities, and the value that they bring to the organization, and that they should be compensated accordingly, regardless if they are a man or a woman, or the color of their skin, or their sexual orientation. None of those things should matter if they're the right person to fill the role.
And if I may add to that, I love what Angela was saying about the glass ceiling. There's, to me, there's two types of glass ceilings. There's the glass ceiling that is there in terms of, you know, our culture and our society, but there's also glass ceilings that we place on ourselves. And this is by no means a challenge that's only unique to women. But what I found again and again and again throughout my career when I was talking to women is them not understanding how amazing they are. I feel like confidence is something they are capable of doing those jobs. They don't have to fit every single criteria on the job description, and they can do it. And I think by having communities and role models that are visible, and the virtual world allows for that, I think that women will be able to grow in confidence, and those that are already confident and have broken their way through, they can reach behind and bring up the people behind them. So this is about breaking two glass ceilings.
Let me ask you very briefly in the time we've got, I want to put this question to both of you, right? I mean, this is a little bit like the Ginger Roger challenge, right? Women have got to do everything men do, but do it in high heels and backwards, as the joke goes, right? When it comes to being a mother or a parent or being sort of a cornerstone of a family, some of these challenges do fall on women. So it doesn't matter how professional and accomplished they are in life, they have all of these other burdens that, for a lot of historical reasons, sometimes men are not as central in performing, right, at the end of the day. And that's what adds pressure to professional women actually leaving the workforce, right? I mean, Fiona, as you mentioned, how do we need to think about, especially when it comes to technical or engineering roles, right? Demanding roles that make it hard to step away from a job for a while and then to return to it. What are the things we have to do to make sure that we're recruiting highly intelligent and driven and passionate women who want to serve in aerospace and defense, but also accommodate that work-life balance that can come unhinged and drive folks out of the community? I find this in military members all the time, where when they decide to have kids, it derails the woman's career in a way that it might not derail a man's career. Angela, or Fiona, whichever one of you want to start off.
Well, I can't speak specifically to the military, but one of the things that I will say is that the crisis has actually challenged us to look at doing business differently. Because of the crisis, we've been looking at, you know, how we can access things virtually, how we can have more flexible schedules. And I think there's a lot of learning that will come out of this that we could apply to make the workplace more accessible for women.
Angela?
To me, it's really about flexibility. Whether coronavirus happened or not, it did. And what it taught us is that we can all work however we need to work. Yes, if you are machining and you're doing some work where you have to physically be at the job, and that's one example of, you know, thousands upon thousands. But for the majority that we're talking about in this conversation that are sitting beside a computer, it doesn't really matter where that computer is. And if that means you need to run to the dentist with your kid, or you want to take your dog for a walk, or you want to, you know, be sitting on the beach, if you're dialed in and participating and, you know, not letting your work lag, as long as you've got the flexibility to do the things that you want, it is I just can't say it enough. I really believe you're getting the better and best value out of your employee because they're getting to live their life. And we've seen it in European countries so often where their days are shorter, their weeks are shorter, their vacations are longer, the maternity and paternity leave, all of these things, you know, their countries are still very successful and their people are happy. So even though we've all been in lockdown, which hasn't made us happy, you know, folks are getting to spend time with their kids that they haven't got to do before and aren't stressed about pickup and having to leave at a certain time. You know, they're getting to take a road trip that otherwise wouldn't have happened because, you know, you can't get out of rush hour traffic in DC to save your life on a Friday. So there is some value that we're looking at that is truly based around flexibility and the cost that it is to these companies to, you know, have an office space and have a hardwired TV monitor and computer monitor and printers and all of the like that comes with the office space, you know, hot seating and being in an office when you need to be should be acceptable for a lot of what we're doing moving forward. It's a cost savings to the company. It allows the employees to have flexibility. Right. And hopefully that means women who, to your point, Vago, are juggling a lot more things when it comes to the false work-life balance, maybe that stress factor and that anxiety will be pushed to the side a little bit so that they can stay and grow in their careers and not feel like they do have to take a step back or to the side, you know, when family does become a priority.
And I think Angela has a really good point as well. There's a lot that we could learn from, when I say we, I mean us here in the US. There's a lot that could be learned from the UK and from Europe. My early career started in the UK, and there's some definite differences. So I think we need to be looking at how other countries are doing it and how we can bring some of that to the soil here on the US.
Very briefly, Fiona, tell everybody where they go, how they register, and how they can participate.
So if you head over to leadingladiesof.com, you can register for our event on Thursday, 18th of March. And if you're unable to make the event, there are ways to register afterwards and have access to the materials.
Guys, thanks so very much for joining us, Fiona and Angela. Break a leg at the conference on Thursday. I'll be tuning in. Thanks so much again for joining us and look forward to having you back on again. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Vago.
Thanks, Vago.
And now a word from our sponsor, retired United States Army Major General Jeff Schlosser, who is the Executive Vice President for Strategic Pursuits at Bell.
We've been building creative and innovative aircraft, next generation types of capabilities for almost 9 decades. Bell is the company that can deliver that.
Thanks very much, sir. And thanks to all of you for listening. Please follow our daily podcasts and visit the Defense and Aerospace Report website to subscribe to our weekly newsletter. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook at Defense and Aerospace Report, and check us out on LinkedIn. And stay tuned for our weekly cyber report sponsored by Northrop Grumman. Thanks again to Bell for their generous sponsorship, and we'll see you again tomorrow.